Hey, hello and welcome to episode number 21 of the AFTV Newscast. It's the first episode of the new year. Hope everybody had a good holiday and a good new year. For those who might be new to the site, who maybe got a Fire TV for Christmas and, you know, stumbled across AFTVnews.com and are watching this now, welcome. I am Elias Saba. I'm the guy who runs AFTVnews.com. It's just me who runs the site. And this is the AFTV Newscast, where pretty much every Thursday I stream live, talking about the week's Fire TV news, and then always end the episode with a Q&A section. I always make a post on Thursdays asking people to submit their questions. Oh, did I say I stream on Thursdays? I think I did say that. I stream Fridays, that is. Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, and then the podcast always goes up in audio form and then also in video form on YouTube the following day on Saturdays. Usually, sometimes a little late on Sundays, but for the most part, I usually get it up on Saturdays. So if you can't watch live, you can always catch it either through any of the RSS feeds for the podcast audio version or on YouTube for the video version. So it's been a little while since I've streamed and released an episode. I took 2 weeks off for the week of Christmas, week of New Year's. So got a little mixture of kind of new news from this week and also a little bit of big stories, big news that didn't go over since the last episode, since it's been about 3 weeks since episode 20 went up. All right, let's go ahead and get started. So the first piece of news, kind of where we left off in the last episode, which was right when software version 5.0.4 came out for the second gen Fire TV. Since that episode aired, we learned that the Amazon did not blocks rooting in that software version, so you can still root that software. And the guys who are working, who basically released the rooting method, have created a set of files specific to that software version. With the current rooting method, they have to create new files for every software version because you're basically patching the system that way. So good news is that Amazon has not blocked rooting yet, but it probably will be blocked pretty soon, I would bet. We'll get into that in a little bit. Along those lines, I just made a post this week talking about a new rooting procedure that's going to come out pretty soon, close to the end of the month, probably from Arbox. So the current rooting procedure basically involves connecting the Fire TV with an A to A USB cable to your PC and then basically streaming over and rewriting some of the system files. It's a very long, tedious process because that connection is very slow. The process takes about 2 hours, and it's a bit dangerous because if something happens during that 2 hours, either a packet gets corrupted during the transfer or something, you have the risk of bricking your device. And so I've been talking to Arbox lately, and he's been playing with his new Fire TV 2, the one that basically AFTV News community chipped in together and bought for him. He is coming up with a kind of a safer rooting procedure. It's similar to the old one where you still have to have an A to A USB cable connected to the Fire TV and connected to your PC. But instead of transferring over files and rewriting the system, operating system of the Fire TV, what he's actually doing is just transferring enough data to boot into a custom recovery. Now, custom recovery is basically where you can modify the system files. It's like a different state of booting. And so it's a lot safer if you're modifying the custom recovery, you're not compromising the operating system, essentially, of the Fire TV. And so once you've booted into a custom recovery, then you basically have full access to modify the operating system. And so once you're in custom recovery, all you have to do is basically flash a pre-rooted ROM, which is basically the operating system, onto the Fire TV, and then it's basically rooted. And so it's a lot safer, and Arbox says he's gotten the data packet that gets sent down to, I believe, about 30 kilobytes, you know, down from about 10 megabytes for the older method. And so it's going to go a lot quicker, a lot less likely something will go wrong in the process. So definitely awesome, definitely much better way of doing things. With this procedure, you're basically going to do a pre-rooted ROM, a custom recovery, and a boot menu, basically kind of all in one process. So you'll boot into the custom recovery, you'll write the custom recovery, which is TWRP, that's the version or the the version of the custom recovery. The old Fire TV, we were using Clockwork Mod. It's a different type of custom recovery, essentially. And so we're switching over to TWRP. Once you get into custom recovery, then you'll be able to flash the pre-rooted ROM that he's also going to create for the latest software version. And that pre-rooted ROM will install a boot menu. And for those not familiar, the boot menu basically launches right when the Fire TV powers on and gives you the option of booting directly into recovery or booting into the operating system. And the reason RBox does it that way is so that in case you mess something up, you can get into recovery most likely, because the Fire TV itself does not have a way to basically force it to boot into recovery. You know, most Android cell phones, they allow you to hold a certain button combination and that will force the device to boot into recovery. And that's basically how you fix anything that you've messed up. And since the Fire TV itself does not have any buttons or any way to basically force it to boot into recovery, RBox has created this boot menu that kind of does that. So you'll basically get like a 5-second prompt to either select custom recovery or select the regular boot process with this boot menu. And so it's really nice that you have it there. It does slow down the boot process just a little bit because it has to boot this separate boot menu first, and then you have to wait a few seconds to select which one you want to boot. But it's definitely well worth it for that added security of knowing that if you mess up anything on the actual Fire TV operating system, you can still get into recovery and still kind of fix the device that way. So again, RBox says that he's working on it right now. He's pretty close to it being done, but the time frame he's saying is near the end of January. And so if you've got a Fire TV right now, you should update it to the latest version 5.0.4 and then block rooting. I'll put a link in the show notes of this episode on how to block. I'll put a link in the show notes on how to block software updates, because if Amazon releases a software update, it might end up blocking this rooting procedure. So you definitely want to block those software updates. Now, for first-gen Fire TV owners, RBox is also going to release this TWRP custom recovery for those devices also. And that will allow you to then install a pre-rooted FireOS 5.0 version ROM on the first-generation Fire TV whenever Amazon finally releases that. This method will not root first-gen Fire TVs, unfortunately. Those devices have to already be rooted with the older towel root method. So here's the TWRP splash screen. RBox has it booting essentially right now, but it's not completely done yet. And so I put up this little post kind of letting people know that right now the Fire TV is on sale for $84.99, $15 off of the regular, you know, $100 price. And it's pretty likely that in the next couple days, the sale will end. And so this might be the last time people can buy a rootable Fire TV from Amazon at a discounted price. So I did want to put that out there. So people have been waiting maybe for RBox to release his rooting method or release custom ROMs for the device before they buy one, that you should probably buy one now, because, you know, most likely Amazon will release a software update that blocks this rooting. And then once they do that, probably within a month or two, you know, it'll be more difficult to find a Fire TV that doesn't have the software update pre-installed that blocks rooting. And so looking at the first-gen Fire TV, it took Amazon about 2 months since the device got rooted to when they released the block for the root. And we're right around that two-month point, you know, mid-January. It'll be 2 months since the second-gen Fire TV was rooted. And so it's likely the next software update, or the one right after that, is going to block rooting. Again, you'll still have a little gap from when they block rooting to when devices start to ship with the block pre-installed. Now, I actually think that gap is going to be a lot shorter for the second-gen Fire TV than it was for the first-gen Fire TV. Now, I remember for the first-gen Fire TV, from when they blocked rooting, it took a few months before people buying new Fire TVs from Amazon would receive a box that had the blocked software update pre-installed. But it seems like Amazon has kind of created a way to basically update these devices after they've left the factory pretty easily, because if you recall, when the Fire TV second gen was first released, it had a lot of buggy issues, and so they put a hold on the new Fire TV stick voice remote bundle. And then once they fixed all those bugs, those Fire TV sticks with voice remotes, they shipped with the latest software pre-installed. And it was about a month after those devices were probably ready to ship. So it seems like Amazon went in after the fact and updated those devices and then shipped them out. So to me, that says that the second gen Fire TV will probably ship with the latest software version a lot quicker than the first gen Fire TV. So again, just putting that out there, if you're looking to buy a second gen Fire TV that you want to root, you should probably get one pretty quick. Don't think you can wait and pick one up later that's also going to be rootable. Places like Best Buy and Staples are always safer for rootable devices, just because the ones that ship from Amazon, they're probably, you know, fresher right out of factory, whereas Staples and Best Buy, they probably get their shipments and they sit in the back or they sit in a warehouse for a lot longer. And so those devices are usually older. So just putting that out there for those who are interested. So one of the features that came with FireOS 5.0.4 was finally the ability to launch sideloaded apps from the Fire TV's app section. Now, we discussed this in the previous episode, but you can't launch the apps from the recent section of the home screen yet. You can listen to the old episode for a full explanation on why that probably is. We'll probably see that later, but for now, you can only launch them from the app section if you're running 5.0.4. And so that has actually caused a little bit of an issue with sideloaded apps, in that the icons of those apps that appear on the Fire TV's interface are pretty grainy and pretty low resolution. That's because the Fire TV pulls icons for apps from their server, from basically the official Fire TV app store. It doesn't pull the icons from the app files themselves. But for sideloaded apps, since those apps are not in the Amazon app store, Amazon has to pull the icon from within the actual APK file. And those icons are low resolution. The one that the Fire TV is using is 96 by 96 pixels, whereas the ones that Amazon uses from the actual Amazon App Store for official Fire TV apps, those are 512 by 512 pixels, so much higher resolution, crisper images. So anyway, long story short, I put up this guide on how to modify the icons for any sideloaded app on the Fire TV. Now, if you're not rooted, the only way to do it is to actually change the icon within the APK file before you actually sideload it onto the Fire TV. Once the app is actually sideloaded on the Fire TV, the device has to be rooted for you to actually go in and modify any of those files. So that's why my guide modifies the icon on the actual APK itself. It's a very simple procedure. I mean, it's actually not even that specific to the Fire TV. It'll actually work with any Android device. There's an application that you can download for free called APK Icon Editor. It's available for both Windows and for Macs. And it's a very simple process. You load up the APK that you want to sideload. You put in the icon, the new icon file that you want to use. Make sure you save it across all sizes, and then save and sign the APK file, and then you just sideload that new APK file onto the Fire TV. And as you can see, if you're watching the video version, you can basically just put in any image you want for the icon. And I know a lot of people like to have custom icons or nice crisp icons, so I wanted to put out this guide. Now, it is important that if you do follow this guide, that the new APK file you create actually has a different signature than the original APK file. And what that means is you can't interchange those two, the customized APK file and the original APK file. So say, for example, you already have Kodi installed on your Fire TV. If you go ahead and modify the icon for Kodi and then try to install that onto the Fire TV on top of the original Kodi, the Fire TV is going to reject it because the two are signed differently. So what you'll have to do is you'll have to back up your data, uninstall the original Kodi, then install the modified Kodi, and then restore your data. I mentioned this in my guide. I'll put a link in the show notes on how to do that, but just something to keep in mind. And then in the future, if you want to update Kodi, you can't just take the original Kodi and update it on the Fire TV using the original APK. You have to do the whole modifying process again. That way you have matching signatures. So it's very simple to do. It's not a hard process, but just something to keep in mind is that modified versions and original versions cannot be interchanged and cannot be, you know, updated on top of each other. All right, moving on to the next topic. I did this little how-to guide and kind of demo of this little Flick button that I purchased. It's actually a little like Bluetooth Android button that you can sync up with your device and have it basically do whatever you want when you click it or double click it or click and hold. So it'll do three actions. And I have a Nexus 6P that I just got, and so I picked this up just to kind of play with it and see what I could do with it. And then I figured I'd try it out on the Fire TV, and it works surprisingly well on the Fire TV. So I put up this little article, little guide about it for those who are interested. Basically what it does is you can sideload their app onto the Fire TV, and it works surprisingly well on the Fire TV, even though it's not made for the Fire TV. And they provide the APK file on their own website, Flix website. And so you can just sideload it. The button is found immediately. You don't have to like do anything weird. You don't have to be rooted. You don't have to load the settings APK file or anything like that to sync this up. You actually don't even have to sync up the device with the Fire TV. The app just kind of takes care of it and finds it. It's pretty cool. I think it has to do with Bluetooth 4.1 that's on the device. It's a little easier to find. It's a bit pricey. I think it's about $30 right now on Amazon, but you could basically sign it up to, you know, on a button press, launch any app you wanted, do any number of tasks on the Fire TV, that sort of stuff. Just a cool little thing, a little toy that I messed with. It's not very practical. I don't think a lot of people are going to use it, but you know, one instance that I found is if you've got tech illiterate family members that just tend to mess things up and can't really use the on-screen menus very well, you can kind of set this up, for example, like to launch Kodi. And so just with one button press, they can always get back to Kodi in case they mess something up. So just something I wanted to put up and mention. And I thought it was interesting that it worked so well with the Fire TV. All right, moving on. Next topic is that, you know, about a week ago or so, Amazon actually released a new Fire TV bundle where they're actually bundling a second gen Fire TV with an HD antenna, of all things, an over-the-air HD antenna. And they're also including an HDMI cable. And so I thought it was definitely worth mentioning, putting it out there. It was very odd because when they bundle these two, you'd think maybe that the two devices work together, but actually they don't at all. They mention on their website in like three or four different places that these two things do not work together. They're just bundling them together as a way to kind of attract cord cutters. So since you don't have any local stations or local channel access on the Fire TV, they thought bundle in an HD antenna so that you can connect it to the tuner on your television. And then that way you get local channels, and then you have the Fire TV as a whole separate thing that lets you do streaming. And so it was a very weird decision. I'm sure they're going to get a lot of confused people, but you know, the bundled price is $125. So for $25, you essentially get this HD antenna plus an HDMI cable. And Amazon sells this antenna separately for $40. So you are saving a little money if you were in the market for this. But for anybody listening, just to be clear, the antenna does not connect to the Fire TV in any way. It does not allow you to watch local channels through the Fire TV in any way. For that, there are actually two options for that, to do that, if you actually want to watch local channels on your Fire TV through an antenna. Tableau sells a device. I'll put a link in the show notes. And HD Home Run sells a device. Those devices have tuners. It's a separate box that you connect to your network. It has a tuner built in. You connect the antenna to that box. And then there are Fire TV apps for those boxes that access the content that those boxes are streaming and are getting over the air. So yeah, it's a bit odd, but hey, new Fire TV bundle for anybody who's interested. So along those same lines, I wanted to quickly mention that Amazon is actually offering $10 off when you purchase the Fire TV and the new Fire TV game controller together. Now, I'm not talking about the Fire TV gaming edition. That's different. This is just when you buy the regular Fire TV with a game controller, you'll get $10 off. So essentially the game controller will be $40 instead of $50. Now, essentially you're going to be paying the same price for a Fire TV and a game controller as you would for the Fire TV gaming edition. But the advantage here is that you're actually still getting the regular voice remote with the Fire TV. Whereas on the gaming edition, you're only getting the game controller and that serves as your only remote. You're not getting the voice remote. But on the gaming edition, you're also getting a 32GB micro SD card and you're getting two free games. And so essentially you can decide which one you want. Do you want a voice remote or do you want a 32GB micro SD card and two free games? So it's kind of nice that there's now an option, because I know a lot of people wanted to get the gaming edition because they knew they wanted to buy the game controller, but they don't want to use the game controller as their main Fire TV interface controlling device because it's kind of cumbersome. It's kind of nice to just do one-handed remote control of the Fire TV, whereas in the game controller, you kind of hold it with two hands most of the time. I mean, even though the game controller can do everything the Fire TV remote can do, it's still kind of nice to have the remote. So I know a lot of people were interested in a separate bundle that had both the Fire TV, the game controller, and the remote in one for a decent price. And so here's that option that Amazon has kind of given you. So just wanted to mention that. All right, before we move into questions and answers, wanted to go over some not completely Fire TV specific news, but still related to the Fire TV. And first up is that this week was CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. And so we got a lot of news coming out of that show. And one of those is that Sling TV announced that they are going to have a new interface for their Sling TV service. And it's not available yet, but eventually it will come to the Fire TV. They haven't really given an exact time frame, but I know a lot of people complained about the Sling TV interface and now it was a little buggy. And so hopefully this will address a lot of those issues. It's kind of nice. So to me, the current Sling TV interface feels a lot like regular old cable subscription, where you're navigating through a guide, you're navigating through channels the old way. Whereas this new interface is kind of more, Fire TV-esque, Netflix and Hulu-esque. And there's a big focus on kind of customization and getting your content up front. So they have a whole new My TV section that lets you favorite shows, and those shows will be there. And then they have a section for what you're currently watching. So anything you've started to watch and paused or left, that will be highlighted on this My TV section. So for the most part, you'll probably use that interface the most, and that way you can kind of find the content that you want to find the most. So wanted to put that out there. They also announced that they're going to be adding ESPN3 to their lineup. So they already have ESPN and ESPN2, and so now they're adding ESPN3. So this is being added to their current $20 channel package. So basically, at no additional cost, eventually in the next few weeks, I would think ESPN3 is going to be added. All right, the other thing that was really popular this week from CES was a lot of Alexa news. So Amazon themselves doesn't really have a booth at CES. They don't really, they never release any products there or anything like that. But Alexa was kind of the little secret underground Amazon project that kind of crept its way into a lot of different CES announcements. And so one of those was from a service called Alarm.com that said that they were going to integrate with Alexa. But from their little press release and their blog post, they kind of hinted at a Alexa capability that does not kind of exist right now. So currently with Alexa, there's an Alexa app that's available on Android devices and iOS devices. And for the most part, you use that app to configure Alexa, but you don't really use it to control Alexa, apart from stopping and playing music. And that's pretty much the only thing that the app can do to affect Alexa directly. But Alarm.com said in their post that they're integrating with Alexa, and you'll be able to turn lights on and off that you've configured to work with Alarm.com service using Alexa. And so that's not new. But then they said that if you're away from your home, you'll be able to issue those same commands to the Alexa app to turn on lights and turn off lights through their Alarm.com service. And so that's actually fairly big news, because currently you cannot speak into the Alexa app and give Alexa commands. You can only do that either through the Fire TV's voice remote or through the Amazon Echo. And so it kind of makes sense that they would add Alexa voice input into the actual app, so that if you're either away from home or away from the device itself, you can, but you do have access to your smartphone, you can still issue Alexa commands. Should be pretty handy. And I've created here just a little mock-up of what it might look like, similar to the current Fire TV app, where you can pull down from the top and just speak into the app, and that voice input will be transmitted to the Fire TV, for a search. The Alexa app just totally makes sense to kind of have a similar feature. And so it seems like, it's almost a sure thing that we're going to see an update to the Alexa app that kind of lets you actually control Alexa fully through the app. So another bit of news from Alexa that we heard out of CES is that the company Invoxia, who created this product called Tribi, which is essentially like a family communication hub/speaker. Their idea is that it's magnetic and you attach it to your fridge and you can leave messages. You can use it as a music speaker and that sort of stuff. But basically they announced at CES that they're going to be the first third-party device that has full Alexa capabilities built in. So essentially it will act exactly like an Amazon Echo. And so this device, you'll be able to basically ask any Alexa features or commands to it that you can to the Echo, but through this different device. So it's pretty cool. About around June or so, Amazon released basically the developer kit for Alexa, and it was kind of in two parts. You know, one part let developers add in third-party abilities, and they call them skills, essentially like apps for Alexa. And so currently there are over 100 apps now, basically that expand Alexa's capabilities. And so we've heard a lot of news about that, and a lot of new Alexa skills have been coming out. But the other half of that we haven't really heard anything about yet was called the Alexa Voice Service. And that basically lets manufacturers integrate Alexa into the device and basically make the device just like an Amazon Echo. And so this device here, the Tribi, is the first one to do that. And so I think 2016, we're going to see a lot of Alexa-capable devices being released, just because it's almost like Android is a great operating system that's available for free for device, you know, smartphone and tablet manufacturers to put onto their device. So they can just create the good hardware and then put this great piece of software onto the device and release their device. And so Alexa is kind of like that now, where manufacturers don't have to basically create their own voice interface or voice assistant. They can just kind of create a great device and then put Alexa on there as their voice interface. So I think a lot of manufacturers are going to be doing this year. On that note, Ford also announced at CES that they are going to integrate Alexa into their Sync Connect, you know, in-car, what they call an infotainment system. So basically, the car's computer, the car's dash, as long as it has an internet connection, will have full Alexa capabilities built in. So while you're in the car, you don't have to talk to your phone or anything. You could just speak to the car's microphone system and make Alexa requests, either play music or any number of features that Alexa can do. And so the Tribi device is already available, but they're going to release a software update, they said around springtime, that brings Alexa in. And Ford, they said that it's probably going to be late 2016 or, you know, second half of 2016 when they integrate Alexa. But Ford is actually also doing the opposite. So not only can you talk to Alexa from within the car, but you can also talk to Alexa through either the Echo or the Fire TV and actually talk to the car in a sense. You can actually ask Alexa about the state and the information about your car. So for example, you can ask the range that's available in your car. So if you have an electric car, you can just ask Alexa for how much miles you can drive on the current charge of that car. Ford also said that you'll be able to ask Alexa to start your car remotely. And so Ford's actually doing both way integration, both putting Alexa in the car and allowing Alexa to access the car from the outside. So pretty cool from Ford. Look forward to seeing how that pans out. It looks like it's very early stages. They released a video that I'll put a link in the show notes for you to check that out. But it's a very basic video right now, so it doesn't fully look like they've fully integrated that. It's more of just an announcement and a proof of concept right now. But, you know, it looks like they've definitely committed to putting Alexa integration into their cars, which is pretty awesome. Next up in a bit of news, also from CES, we heard. So this company called Annapurna Labs, which Amazon acquired a year ago for, $350 million. They're a chip manufacturer. And they announced this year at CES that they're going to start selling their own line of ARM-based processors. They're calling the line the Alpine line of chips. And so this basically puts Amazon into the ARM processor manufacturing and selling market. Which is pretty cool. It's going to be a first for Amazon. It's worth noting because the Fire TV itself uses an ARM processor, and they said that these processors are going to be tailored for media streaming devices, smart home products like the Amazon Echo, streaming media devices like the Fire TV. So it really seems like these devices are going to be almost perfect for Amazon's line of home devices. So it's possible in the near future we'll see Amazon releasing a new Fire TV or a new Amazon Echo that has their own manufactured processor built in, which is really interesting because one big advantage that Apple has, for example, with their iPhone and their iPads, is that they manufacture the processors themselves, or at least they design it, and they actually have like Samsung or somebody else manufacture it, but they actually design it in-house. And so there's a big advantage to designing your own processor, especially if you're tailoring it towards your own software. And so there's a chance you can run leaner and get a lot more out of a processor at a lower clock speed than, say, if you just, you know, pick one off of the shelf, for example. You know, like iPhones and iPads, they tend to run at a lower clock speed than Android devices, but they're as snappy, if not snappier, than a lot of those devices that have faster processors in them. And that's because of that really tight integration between the hardware processor and the software that's on the device. And so hopefully this is kind of foreshadowing Amazon kind of moving towards that, where they integrate their hardware and their software really tightly, and maybe get some really nice snappy devices out, you know, in the future. Right, next bit of news that came out of CES that's kind of related to the Fire TV is that the UHD Alliance, which is a group of a whole bunch of manufacturers, I mean, big names, Netflix, Samsung, Sharp, the studios like Universal, Disney, Warner Brothers, Fox, I mean, even, you know, THX, DTS, just a whole bunch of really big companies. They basically created this alliance a year ago, and the purpose was to kind of standardize what Ultra HD 4K content and devices would be like, and so that we don't end up with different competing standards, similar to how Blu-rays and HD DVDs were kind of, you know, butting heads back in the day. And so they formed last year at CES, and then this year they basically announced their kind of branding and their logo, and that they're going to have something called Ultra HD Premium. And so they've set out a bunch of specs that have to do with color gamut and brightness and the luminance, the peak luminance, the HDR, dynamic range of the device, like all these different aspects that a device should be capable of doing, be capable of achieving. And if devices can achieve those minimum specs, then the device will basically get this Ultra HD Premium logo placed onto it and branding for it. And so Amazon is part of this alliance, and so it's most likely the Fire TV will be compliant with this Ultra HD Premium, not the current Fire TV, because that's obviously already out right now, but future Fire TVs, I wouldn't be surprised if they come with this Ultra HD Premium logo on the box. So something to keep an eye on if you're buying a new TV. You know, in a few months you might want to check out this Ultra HD Premium Alliance logo, just to make sure that the device is compliant. I'm sure most devices will be. It'll probably be the lesser known manufacturers that might not be into this compliance. Next up, a few weeks ago, we heard from Razer that they are integrating their Ouya, basically, game store into the Forge TV. And for those who don't know, the Forge TV is their Android TV device, one of three Android TV devices. So you've got the NVIDIA Shield TV, you've got the Nexus Player, and then you've got the Forge TV. And for a while, it looked like Razer was kind of giving up on the Forge TV. It got removed from the Google Play Store, so you couldn't buy it from Google directly anymore. It looks like since Razer acquired Ouya a few months back, that they finally kind of integrated that into the Forge TV, and they're releasing some software updates now. So wanted to put that out there, let people know that that's still a viable option if you're interested in buying an Android TV device. They are giving a incentive on current Ouya owners, so they get $50 off of the Forge TV, and they get $10 store credit to use inside of this new game store. So the game store they're calling Cortex Game Store, that's going to be their little custom game store, and a lot of Ouya games are going to be ported over into that store and available only in that store on the Forge TV. So it's really nice to see that Razer is staying in the Android TV game, because competition, you know, for the Fire TV, for the Shield TV, for all these streaming boxes is always good. We want the number of possible options for everybody to grow. So it's great to see that Razer is still behind the device and is pushing out updates. Last up in news, just before we get into the Q&A section, wanted to mention that Yahoo has decided to shut down their video streaming service. So it was called Yahoo Screens. About a couple months ago, they released a Fire TV app. It was a decent app. It had a bit of streaming issues here and there, but for the most part, it was a nice app. Everything was free in there. They had some ad-supported content, but they've decided to shut it down. I checked today. The app is still available on the Amazon Fire TV's App Store. It's still working. You can still stream the content just fine from within the app. So I did want to mention that if anybody was interested in streaming the sixth season of Community, which is probably the best content you can get out of that app, there's another show called, I think, Outer Office. That was like a Yahoo original. That's also available through the app. So if you're looking to stream those through your Fire TV, you should probably get on that pretty soon. Binge watch that as quick as you can, because the service is getting shut down, not going to be available for much longer. I think you'll still be able to stream those shows through the actual Yahoo website, but most likely the actual app will just stop working even if you've got it installed on the Fire TV. All right, let's move on to questions and answers. As I mentioned, every Thursday I put up a post on AFTVnews.com and ask people to submit their questions for me to answer here on the podcast. If you're watching live, you can always tweet me at AFTVnews. I'll answer questions live. We've already got a question or two here that we'll answer live, and then we'll get into the kind of pre-submitted questions on the post. All right, first question here on Twitter is from Neil. He asks, any way to change default keyboard on rooted first-gen Fire TV? You can. It's a bit of a cumbersome process. You have to sideload the settings.apk file. I don't have a guide on exactly how to do that, but I will put a link into a guide for the Wii remote syncing with the old first-gen Fire TV. To sync your Wii remote, you kind of have to set the Wii remote as an input device, and that's basically the keyboard. So you'll have to basically sideload a keyboard and sideload the settings.apk file. And then again, this will only work on a rooted device, but if you follow the guide and then go into the settings.apk and select a different input device, if you've sideloaded a keyboard app, you should be able to select that as the input. Now, it probably won't work across the entire Fire TV interface. I've never actually done this completely myself, but it might work in certain apps, but you'll have to kind of experiment to see how it goes. Just be sure you have a keyboard and a mouse hooked up to the device just in case you kind of lock yourself out of the on-screen keyboard. Again, I haven't tried this myself, but you can definitely give it a shot. I know you can change the input option through the settings.apk file. All right, first question here submitted on the post from Brad says, I have been a bit out of touch, but was wondering if there was any progress on getting a FireOS 5 rooted ROM for original Fire TV. Yeah, there is going to be a pre-rooted FireOS 5 based ROM released from RBox for the first gen Fire TV. Now, you will have to install a new custom recovery. So currently you probably have Clockwork Mod installed on the first gen Fire TV. That's not going to be compatible with FireOS 5 according to RBox. He says that you'll have to install TWRP, which he'll release, but he's waiting for Amazon to release the final version of FireOS 5 for the first gen Fire TV before he creates a pre-rooted ROM. So he's done some testing with the current developer preview FireOS 5, you know, software update for the first gen Fire TV, and it looks like he's got that working just fine, but he's not going to release that just in case Amazon makes changes for the final FireOS 5 software update for the first gen Fire TV. But no worries there. If you've got a first gen Fire TV, you're not going to be stuck on FireOS 3, which is what it is right now. You will be able to update without losing root with RBox's new ROM that he will release. Whenever Amazon finally releases that FireOS 5 software update, RBox should release his pre-rooted ROM, you know, pretty soon after that. And of course, I'll have a full guide on how to switch over from Clockwork Mod to TWRP when the time comes. All right, next question here is from Johnny. He says, still wondering on any updates on the release of FireOS 5 for the first-gen Fire TV since the holidays are over. Now, Johnny here is asking about the official FireOS 5 release. So still, last I heard was right around the end of November, start of December. I heard from my sources that Amazon would be releasing FireOS 5 for the first-gen devices. That's the first-gen Fire TV and the older non-voice Fire TV stick. So I heard they would release FireOS 5 in January. I haven't heard anything new since then from my sources. I haven't really asked them either. It's still just the first week of January here, so hopefully we'll still get that sometime this month. But I don't know when. I haven't heard anything new. I haven't heard a release date. And of course, Amazon hasn't really given any information themselves. They never really do. It still seems like that's the case. My sources haven't contacted me telling me otherwise. So I assume we're still going to see FireOS 5 released for first gen devices this month at some point. Hopefully sooner rather than later. One thing I did think of is that since the Fire TV has been rooted now, the second gen Fire TV that is, I would assume that they're going to work on blocking that rooting method. So that might take away some developer time from releasing the FireOS 5 software update. You know, that might delay FireOS 5 a little bit because, you know, that's probably a priority for Amazon, I would think, even though we don't want it. But, you know, it is, and you have to figure that's going to be the case. So we'll see. Hopefully, at some point in January, we'll see FireOS 5 released. Again, I haven't heard anything new. I'll absolutely post on AFTVnews.com if I hear anything about FireOS 5 for older devices. All right, next question here is from Riddler. He says, do you know if Market Helper still works for the Fire TV 1 on the latest rooted firmware? And if so, which version of Market Helper? Do you know of any other methods to install unsupported apps from the Play Store? That license check that they were purchased and installed from the Play Store. Thanks for the great site. First off, for those who don't know, Market Helper is an app that kind of lets you trick the Google Play Store into thinking your Fire TV is a different device so that apps become compatible. Because when you install the Google Play Store on the Fire TV, it doesn't recognize the device. And so a lot of the apps get hidden because they are listed as incompatible. And so you use Market Helper to trick the Google Play Store into thinking the Fire TV is like a smartphone or a tablet so that more apps become available. I have a guide for installing Market Helper and installing the Google Play Store on the Fire TV, the first gen Fire TV. It's an old guide that I haven't actually checked on to see if it's actually still valid. It's been on my list of things to do for sure to see if, you know, you could still install the latest version of Google Play Store on the older Fire TV and even on the new Fire TV now that it's been rooted. It's on my list of things to do to check to see if both Market Helper and the Google Play Store are compatible with the device. I've actually been waiting for FireOS 5 to be released for the first gen Fire TV to kind of get back and maybe write a new guide on how to install the Google Play Store and how to install Market Helper or some other way of tricking it. So I can't really help you right now and let you know whether it's still working or not, because again, I haven't checked on it yet. But once FireOS 5 comes to the first gen Fire TV, I will look into the Google Play Store and how to get it onto both the old and the new device running FireOS 5, just because I'm sure the old method, the old APKs for the Google Play Store are not compatible with FireOS 5. So we'll have to update that. But look for that in the future. Again, I know it's something people have been wanting, and I know it's something I've been meaning to do. So I'll definitely have a guide on installing the Google Play Store up, hopefully shortly after FireOS 5 comes to all devices. Next question here is from Dennis. He says, what are your thoughts on getting the universal search like Roku has for the Fire TV? Amazon is easy to search, but Netflix is not fun. So a lot of people actually don't realize that the Fire TV does have a universal search. People don't kind of realize because the Fire TV tends to favor its own Amazon videos over third-party videos like from Hulu or from Showtime or from HBO, but it actually does have a universal search. So a lot of times if you search for something and you go into the more ways to watch option on the Fire TV, you'll see a lot of different ways to watch it from third parties like Crackle, Showtime, Hulu, HBO. Those all work on the Fire TV search. And so the big missing one is obviously Netflix. So Amazon actually puts out documentation on how third parties can integrate themselves into the Fire TV search. It's there. They have the whole process set up, and it's actually up to the third parties to integrate into the Fire TV search. So the fact that Amazon doesn't have Netflix is not because Amazon themselves haven't added Netflix. It's because Netflix has not added themselves into the Fire TV. And I think it's because it's in Netflix's advantage to not make the Fire TV the, you know, best streaming device out there. And I think if Netflix integrated their library into the Fire TV search, it would become a pretty killer Netflix option. And since Amazon and Netflix kind of have competing services with Amazon Prime's, you know, video options, it's kind of the direct competitor to Netflix. I think Netflix doesn't want to boost up the Fire TV that much. So I think that's why we don't have Netflix on the device. But again, it's not because Amazon hasn't added it in. It's because Netflix themselves haven't put it in there. So if you want it in there, you should contact Netflix, tell them, hey, you should add your library into the Fire TV, even though I doubt they'll ever do it. But the Fire TV does have universal search. I mean, just try it, you know, search for something like Tom Hanks movies, for example, and then look at the different options for playing those files. You'll see things from Crackle, you'll see things from HBO, from Showtime. They all show up as an option in the search. Even content that is actually not available through Amazon will come up in the search results if it's available through a third-party app. So it's there, it's just Netflix themselves don't want to be integrated in for some reason. Next question here from PC. They say, I recently migrated from a first-gen to a second-gen Fire TV. I was under the impression my saved games in-app purchases would be accessible on the new box due to GameCircle's Whisper Sync, but that's not the case. What process is available to get my old data onto the new Fire TV? Thanks. The Whisper Sync feature for Game Circle actually only works if the developer themselves have integrated that option into their game. So needless to say, a lot of developers have not integrated that into their game. So that's why not all games will save their saved game data to the cloud, and you'll be able to access it from different devices, or if you uninstall the game, for example. Your only option really is to manually copy those files from the old device over to the new device. And so for the most part, app developers, both games and regular apps, they store their app data and their game saves in two different locations. One is the /SD card directory. So if you load an app like ES File Explorer, which is a file browser, you'll be able to browse to these different directories. And so /SD card is the main directory. If you copy that, if you basically compress that entire directory, copy it over onto like a flash drive or even over the network and put that onto the new device, a lot of your saved game data will transfer over there, specifically the /SD card/Android directory. Now, the other directory that apps store data in is /data/data. It's kind of a weird directory, but that's basically what it's at. So in the directory /data/data, you'll find a different folder essentially for every app on your system. And that's where you'll find saved game data, in-app purchase data, that kind of stuff. And so that directory is actually copy protected, so you might have a little trouble accessing it, but you should be able to read files off of it. You know, you might not be able to compress files right in that directory, but you should be able to copy them. So again, using ES File Explorer, you should be able to copy that onto an external device. The problem, though, is writing it back onto a device like the second-gen Fire TV. You're going to have the device rooted to do that, unfortunately, because you just can't write to that directory unless you're rooted. You can first try the /SD card directory, since you can freely read and write from that directory. Hopefully your game saves your data there, but if it doesn't, you're gonna have to have a rooted device and copy it over from the /data/data directory. Next up here from Amin, they ask, how is Fire TV 4K compared to NVIDIA Shield in terms of streaming purposes like Kodi, for example? Is there any news regarding Amazon's plans to release a newer Fire TV set? All right, two separate questions there, but we can definitely address them. So as far as streaming 4K through Kodi, the Fire TV is not the device for you for that. Most apps on the Fire TV cannot play back 4K video. Only special apps can do it. It's actually reserved for kind of the big names like Netflix. Kodi, for example, cannot play back 4K content on the 4K second-gen Fire TV, unfortunately. That it has to do with the fact that the Fire TV's interface is in 1080p, and then it has to do this resolution switch every time it plays back 4K content. And then when it's done playing back 4K content, it switches back to 1080p. So because it has to do this resolution switch back and forth, Amazon is not making that available to third-party developers. I wrote an article about this. I'll put a link in the show notes for you to read up a little bit more on that. But that basically tells you right there that if you're looking for 4K content within Kodi, whether it's local or streaming, the Fire TV, unfortunately, is not for you. Maybe on the next-gen Fire TV, where it'll actually be a native, all-the-time 4K device. But right now, that's not the case. As far as the NVIDIA Shield goes, I'm not that familiar with it, but I do know that they actually output 4K at all times, and they just upscale the interfaces from 1080p to 4K. And so they're not actually rendering all the interfaces, all the apps in 4K, unfortunately, but they do at least upscale them and put out 4K. And so Kodi on the NVIDIA Shield can play 4K content. And so if you're looking for 4K content, that's pretty much your only option, is that NVIDIA Shield device. So look into that. Again, I'm not too familiar with whether Kodi can stream 4K, but I know it can play back local 4K content on the NVIDIA Shield. As far as Amazon announcing any plans or releasing any plans about a new Fire TV, haven't heard anything there. You know, Amazon's always really quiet about that stuff. You know, we always only get leaks here and there. But we just had the new Fire TV released in October. And so at the absolute earliest, I would think at the end of 2016, you know, around October, around November, at the absolute earliest, that's when a new Fire TV would be released. But I wouldn't be surprised if in 2016, we don't see a new Fire TV released. You know, maybe we'll see like an update with maybe a new remote, a new peripheral. Like say maybe they'll release the existing 4K Fire TV with a remote that has like a headphone jack built in or something like that, or maybe a motion remote. So I think that's more likely than having a full-blown new Fire TV released. That said, I do think that we'll probably see a new Fire TV stick released this year. Again, haven't heard anything new. We did see a little hint at a second-gen Fire TV stick. It was very tiny because Amazon labeled one of their Fire TV stick updates as Gen 1. And since there is really only a Gen 1 Fire TV stick, since the quote new Fire TV stick is really just the same old one but with a new voice remote, I would be shocked if we don't see a new Fire TV stick released this year, probably again at the end of the year. But we'll have to just wait and see. Haven't heard anything. We'll have to see, you know, in a few months, maybe we'll get like a leak come out or something. All right, next question's here from Stan. He says, do you think an Echo 2 will come out this year? What do you want to see in an Echo 2? I don't know if an Echo 2 will be released this year. There's a huge focus on Alexa this year, that's for sure. I mean, Amazon looks like they're putting in a lot of effort, a lot of developers, a lot of their staff working on expanding Alexa and making that the key product. You know, the focus is definitely more on Alexa as a voice interface for a whole bunch of different devices than it is for the Amazon Echo itself. That said, the Echo, it's officially been out for, you know, less than a year now. So I guess we're kind of due sometime this year for an Echo 2. You know, when they first announced the Echo, it was like an invite-only system for a few months. So it wasn't officially released. But, you know, I can definitely see an Echo 2 released this year since that device has been so popular. So it'd be silly for Amazon to forget it and leave it aside. As far as what kind of features I would see in an Echo 2, in CES this year, I think it was LG. They had this pretty cool foldable flexible screen. We've kind of seen these flexible screens for a while now, and so I thought it'd be pretty awesome if the Amazon Echo itself was basically made of a 360-degree, basically, you know, round, curved screen. It's probably going to be pretty pricey, I would imagine. But the for those who aren't aware, the Amazon Echo, if you pair it with a Fire tablet, whenever you make Alexa commands, the actual tablet itself will light up and show you more information based on that command. So, for example, if you ask about the weather, you'll see a five-day forecast just appear on the Fire tablet. And so I thought that'd be pretty awesome if, you know, 360 degrees around the actual cylindrical Amazon Echo, you actually saw like a scrolling five-day forecast, for example, when you ask for the weather. Or, you know, there's a lot of more information you can get visually when you request it from Alexa. I mean, I know the main interface is voice, but it's nice to have that secondary display. So I don't know. You know, if anything, that would be pretty awesome to have like a 360-degree screen on the Echo 2, for example. And it'd have to be 360 degrees because the Amazon Echo has the like 7 directional microphones. So you don't really know where the person's going to be standing. So you're going to have to be able to display that from all around the Amazon Echo. So yeah, it's probably way out there. I don't know if that would actually come out or how useful it would be, but that's kind of the first thing that pops in my head, I think, because I was just reading up on that curved LG screen that they were showing off at CES this year. Next question here is from Vulcan195, a regular here on the podcast. He says, just like the frustrating experience with some on-screen keyboards that lay out all the keys in one long row instead of multiple rows, I am beginning to get annoyed by Amazon's decision to make a scroll through every single title on my watch list to get to title number 43 on my watch list. Apple was smart enough to dump the standard Netflix Hulu interface that uses similar logic and build their own. The Apple TV interface for Netflix, Hulu, and YouTube are much quicker at navigating across multiple rows and titles. Is there any hope that Amazon will see the light? Yeah, I kind of agree. The My Videos section and the Watch List section on the Fire TV, it's a bit lackluster. There's not really much more than just one big long scrolling list. I mean, same goes for like your My App section. At least they added that ability to favorite your apps so that way they appear on the beginning of that list so you're not scrolling through. I think Amazon is focusing mostly on the search feature. So if you're looking for something on your watch list, you would search for it instead of just scrolling through a big watch list. But I mean, that said, it is nice to kind of see like an organized version of the watch list. I haven't heard anything about that being updated. I haven't heard anything about the interface itself being updated. The only thing I've really heard from my sources is kind of that there's always this updated Fire TV interface sort of in the works for the Fire TV. but it's never really a priority because new features and, of course, bug fixes kind of always take precedence over redoing the Fire TV interface, just because the Fire TV interface is there, it's working. Most people would rather have new features than a new way to access the same features, so that's why they kind of focus on that more so than updating the Fire TV interface. But that said, the Fire TV interface is now a year and a half old. It's getting close to 2 years old. You know, the first Fire TV came out in April of 2014, and we really haven't seen a change in the interface yet at all. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point this year, or maybe at the end of the year when new devices come out, we'd see a completely, you know, revamped interface. They did just revamp the interfaces on the Fire tablets that just came out this last September, was it? And so maybe we'll see the same treatment on the Fire TV, but sorry, I haven't heard anything about it myself. Next question here is from Upman. He says, one thing I have wanted to ask for a while is there any way to have Skype work on the Fire TV? If so, which camera works with it? No, definitely not. I've actually seen this asked a bunch of times on you know, Reddit or XDA or different forums or even the comment sections on my own posts. But for the most part, nobody's ever gotten a camera to work with the Fire TV. I did see once where it was, I think it was on XDA, somebody got a camera to work with the first gen Fire TV, a rooted device, by doing some manipulation of the drivers or something like that. But they never actually got it to work with Skype. They just got it to work with some random third party application. So sorry, unfortunately, for the most part, there is no way to get Skype working on the Fire TV, you know, with a camera. Next question here is from Josh. He says, I got a Fire TV 2 for myself for Christmas. I have Kodi running, thanks to you, and use it to stream from my network drive, and it works great. What is the best way to make use of the SD card? Thanks for all the work you put into the website and podcast. Oh, you're very welcome, Josh. I'm glad you enjoy the Fire TV that you got yourself and that I could help you get Kodi installed on there. So really, there are only two things you could do with an SD card as far as Kodi's concerned. One is to actually offload the Kodi database onto the SD card. Actually, you know, all of your Kodi settings can be offloaded onto the SD card. So if you have a large library, that Kodi database, especially all the thumbnails that Kodi downloads for your different videos and your different files, those take up a lot of space and they can eat up a big chunk of your internal storage. And so I have a guide, I'll link it in the show notes, on how to transfer Kodi, basically how to transfer Kodi's database files and settings over onto the SD card to free up your internal storage. So that's really the best use you can get out of the SD card on the second gen Fire TV as far as Kodi's concerned. The other nice thing you could do with the SD card for Kodi is you can actually play video files off of the SD card itself. And I know if you have a network set up and like you do, you're streaming files, that's really the ideal way to do it. But it actually turns the Fire TV into a nice little portable media device. So if you've got like a 128 gigabyte micro SD card, for example, you can load that up with a whole bunch of movies, whole bunch of TV shows. And if you're traveling, the Fire TV is pretty compact and you just take that with you with the remote and HDMI cable just in case and pop in an SD card. And that way you've basically got full access to your own content in any hotel room, for example, on the TV that might be in there. So that would be my other use case for the SD card, is to use it as like local storage for your library when you're traveling. So those are kind of the two ways to use the SD card with Kodi on the new Fire TV. All right, next question here is from Adam. He says, Happy New Year, Elias. He says, thank you for the tip on the Knights of the Old Republic sale. My console-deprived son loves the game with the Fire TV game controller he got for Christmas. Now, that's good to hear. I'm glad you got it on sale. I remember it was on sale. $2.99, was it? Or did it actually go down to 99 cents at one point? I think it was. Yeah, that's actually a really good game to get for that price. So really fun to get that. All right. Adam says, my problem is that the game is really, really big and the Fire TV 2's Gen 2 internal memory is really, really small. I got a shiny new 64 gigabyte micro SD card in there, but it seems I can't copy the game to the card. So I'm stuck with almost no internal memory and occasionally notices from the Fire TV that I'm low on memory and that it might interfere with streaming. Any idea on how I can copy the game over to the SD card? Would rooting be a solution? Thanks. So yeah, there's no real way to copy Knights of the Old Republic over to the SD card officially. The app developer themselves have to actually change their app so that it downloads the game files when you install the game as opposed to after the fact. So when you launch the game, it then downloads those. So if you launch the game and it downloads a big chunk of data afterwards, unfortunately, you can't move that over to the SD card easily. When I was at Amazon's E3 party earlier last year, I talked to a bunch of the App Store team for the Fire TV, and they actually told me that they contact these developers and they tell them to kind of change the way they're doing their games, because downloading a whole big chunk of files after the fact is really not the way they want game developers to treat the Fire TV anymore, or any Android games that for that fact, even the tablets. And so they're encouraging app developers to change their apps, and some have already done that, but unfortunately Knights of the Old Republic has not done that. Now, if you do root your second gen Fire TV, you should be able to move those files over to the micro SD card. The simplest way is to create what's called a symbolic link. So what you would do is you would copy those files from where they are right now. You would copy those over onto the micro SD card, and then create a symbolic link that basically is like a shortcut that tells the app, instead of looking here, look for the files over here. It's not an official way of doing things, but it is possible because Android is based on a Linux operating system. I'll try to find some guides online on how to do this, how to create symbolic links, and include those in the show notes. Unfortunately, I don't have a guide myself, but that's probably the easiest way to get things done. The good news is, Android Marshmallow 6.0 has actually added a feature that lets you use external storage as a complete internal storage replacement. This is a feature of Android, and so later, if Amazon ever updates the Fire TV's operating system from Android 5.0 to Android 6.0, we'll probably get this feature also. So I would expect, you know, down the line, maybe in about a year or so, we'll probably see an update maybe to Marshmallow on the Fire TV. And so when that comes, this won't be a problem anymore, because you'll literally be able to tell the Fire TV to use the external storage as if it was the internal storage. And so in the future, it'll be a lot easier. But for now, I would think that creating a symbolic link is probably the easiest way. All right, next question here from Lewis. He says, "Hi, Ayas. I hope you had good holidays. I will tune in halfway today because watching new Tarantino." I assume you're watching the new movie. First question, he says, "Do you know if the ebook library that you can access with Prime is also available on Amazon tablets besides the Kindle?" I'll address this question before moving on to your second question here. Yeah, you definitely can. Amazon has this feature called a lending library where they have, I think it's like, a few hundred thousand books that are available to Prime members to, quote, borrow, read, and then release. And yeah, it's available on the Kindle, and it's definitely available on all of their Fire tablets. If you go into the Fire tablets book section and then you go into the menu, you'll see a section there called Kindle Lending Library or something, and yeah, you can totally access it from all of the Fire tablets. I don't think you can get it on Amazon's Kindle app for like Android devices or iOS devices, but it is available on the Fire devices, so yeah, definitely check that out. Lewis's next question is, "Did you already put Kodi on the Apple TV? I've seen already that some people did. If not, when are you planning this, if you're planning this?" No, I haven't done it myself yet. I still haven't actually touched my Apple TV ever since I first got it and kind of played with it initially. I know I did say I was going to put Kodi on there, and I do still plan to do that. I did see that people got Kodi running on there first, but it was like an alpha build, I think, and it wasn't all the features. So I was kind of waiting for it to get a little more finalized before I played with it myself. Plus, I've been pretty busy with the holidays and all that stuff, but I do plan on still putting Kodi on there. I'll probably put out a guide, even though there are other guides out there already on getting Kodi on the Apple TV, but I'll probably put up my guide for that at some point. But I've been focusing more on the Fire TV lately, so haven't played with the Apple TV too much. Right, next question here is from Stank. He says, "I love the $50 Fire tablet that you plugged on Black Friday. I was able to gain Google Play access on it without rooting. Is it possible to do this on the Fire TV or stick without root? Thanks and Happy New Year to you." I have, like I mentioned earlier, I have been meaning to look into getting Google Play onto the second gen Fire TV and the Fire TV stick running Fire OS 5. I have been waiting for the older devices to get updated to Fire OS 5 to kind of look into this and maybe create new guides. So look for that in the future. I did see some guide about getting Google Play installed without rooting. So I do think it's possible. If you do a Google search, you might find something, I think, on XDA forums. But I don't have a guide myself. I haven't looked into it myself, but I do plan on looking into it and writing a new guide for that soon. All right, next question here is from CD Lenford. He says, asking you to be a guinea pig as usual, but have you tried the new update blocking method that doesn't require root, but also doesn't require modem or DNS configuration? It's referenced here, and he links to this XDA developers forum. I have seen this little guide about blocking Fire TV updates on the device itself without rooting. I haven't tried it myself. I figured there aren't too many people who would kind of need to follow this guide because most people can do it through their routers, and I think it's a lot easier to do it that way. The advantage of this guide is that, yes, it is on the device itself. So if you travel with the device and connect it to a different network outside of your own network, it would still be blocked. I do plan at some point to see, to try this guide out, but no, sorry, I haven't done it yet. All right, that'll conclude the 21st episode of the AFTV Newscast. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that like button. Subscribe to my channel, youtube.com/AFTVnews. I'm almost at 1,000 subscribers, which is pretty awesome. Of course, you can subscribe to the audio version of the podcast through either the RSS feed, through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn. All those links are in the show notes. Really appreciate those who subscribe and keep watching. Of course, I always stream live every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Love for people to tune in live. You can ask questions live through Twitter, and it's really a nice interaction there. So thanks again for watching, and look for new episodes every week, published every Saturdays. All right, take care.